Hi, this is Paul Puckett, and welcome to Getting There. Before we start this week's episode, I want to apologize for not being on the air last week. We had some travel over the past few weeks, and last week had a little unexpected travel. I'd like to dedicate today's show to an unnamed friend of mine who is listening from a hospital bed where he will be fully recovering from a sort of freak accident. So my only advice, so that you'll know exactly who I'm talking to, the person that is tell the nurses that there's no need whatsoever for any icy hot, and we wish you well in your recovery. Since many of you listening may have somebody in a similar situation, we'll just dedicate the show to everybody who's currently recovering from an unexpected accident. The inspiration for today's show also came from the last couple of hours driving back. I did not choose the music, neither did Harry. The music was selected and played, and it was a wide variety, and it kept us wide awake as we finished that last couple of hours of driving. One of the songs, I had never really listened to the lyrics, and it's a millennial song. So today we're going to be talking about millennial generation. They keep popping up on Facebook and LinkedIn and in the news, and everybody has an opinion on millennials. Well, careful what you say about them. It just so happens I have two of them, daughters, that are millennials, and I'm very optimistic about what the millennial generation may accomplish. One of the shows we did, I think it was the fourth episode, was with the Lori Peters, the founder of the Happiness Hangout, and I had asked friends, what songs should I play about being happy? So since the goal of this show is to improve your life, let's maybe think about being happy. Here's one of the songs that I didn't select for that show, not because it wasn't a good song, but because, well, I knew you guys would already get to know this one, but nonetheless, it's a real great song. I always mispronounce the artist's name. Let's see if I get it right. Pharrell, Happy.
By the way, because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without.
And that was Pharrell Williams, Happy. One of these days I'll be able to say that, just nice and smooth. Pharrell Williams, Happy. At any rate, we should all try to be happy, regardless of how old we are and what we're doing, and maybe worry less, not only about our own lives, but about others, specifically, in this case, the millennial generation. I was looking at, I believe this was from Facebook. I found a column from MarketWatch, dated May 25th, 2016, by Victor Rakletis. Victor, if I'm mispronouncing your name, you have my apologies. The article's title is Millennials Think They'll Earn Six Figures by Age 30 and Expect to Work Until Age 90. This is according to research performed by Morningstar, and they actually did the research in Britain. By the end of the day's show, and as much as I talk about British TV, you may become convinced that I don't live in Florida, I live in Britain. But at any rate, what do millennials expect when it comes to paychecks and retirement? They went out and asked a boatload of millennials that question. What do you expect from a pay standpoint? When do you expect to retire? They got wide answers, as you would get from any group of people. Some joked that, you know, they might be able to retire by the time they're 80 or 90. Some are aiming for age 60. Some look to marry rich and stop working. Good luck. And then this was a key thing the MarketWatch people wanted to point out. Most of them said they do not expect to hire a professional to help them prepare for retirement. And this was an issue they felt, the researchers felt, in how millennials plan to handle things. So I want to point a couple things out about prior generations. First of all, a significant percentage, around, I believe, 50% of retired Americans, none of whom are millennials, unless they patented something or developed a computer program, were able to retire in their 20s. None of the American retirees are millennial generation. They're just beginning to be baby boomer. Yet, almost half of them are 100% dependent on Social Security for their retirement income. The next 25% are primarily dependent on Social Security income for their retirement, combined with just a little bit from other sources. And it's really just the top 25% of American retirees who are able to live purely on investment income, or at least have it be the primary source of their retirement income. That also includes the few remaining who have pensions, which are much less common today than they used to be. What I found interesting in this article is, okay, if they don't plan to hire professional advisors for their finances, one could believe that means they don't take their money seriously. Or you could look at it from a variety of other ways. Maybe they realize that the majority of people don't necessarily use professional advice. Some don't need it because, quite frankly, they don't have anything to manage. The advice they need that's financial is maybe you should save some money and invest some money if you can. It's not as easy today as it used to be. The really key thing in this column, though, is what millennials do with their money. Research indicates, according to this article, that they deal with significant financial obstacles. Student loans, because of the cost of education going up so much, is so much higher than it used to be. If you're in a position to help your descendants, I strongly encourage you to do that. There's a wide variety of ways to do that, some of which are beneficial from a tax standpoint. They also recognize that the economy is not necessarily that good from a job standpoint, and they may have difficulty finding work. About two-thirds believe they won't ever get a home unless their parents help them. What's significant is the very last sentence of the article, so I'm going to quote this one. That's even though millennials are more inclined to save a significant chunk of their paycheck than other groups. That's end quote. Quote, that's even though millennials are more inclined to save a significant chunk of their paycheck than other groups, unquote. Okay, millennials, if you're listening to me, and your parents and grandparents, if you're listening to me, if you save more than previous generations, if you spend less than you earn, then even though you think, oh, I'll never hire an advisor, I'll never need one, look how bad the economy is, look how tough things are, if you're saving money in your 20s, your generation may, in fact, end up being one of the wealthier generations simply because you spend less than you earn. There are advantages to growing up in a time period where you see your government run up massive amounts of debt and you look at the mistakes of past generations. You'll make your own mistakes. We're all human. But I think if you save, if you spend less than you earn, I don't think I know, you will be very well off. Okay, getting back to driving. No, I'm not in the car. I heard a song. I'd heard the song before. It's a British artist, but you'll know her here in America. And actually, she was a judge on the British version of the TV show The Voice. And this song came on when we were driving along, and I started listening to the lyrics, and I thought, how have I missed that? Okay, we all know what type of music I normally listen to. Blues, anything with electric guitar. Obviously, Alan Parsons. I'm pretty across the board, but there's a style that's fairly consistent when it comes to music of the past, 50 years, maybe more. I like blues. Today, I want to talk about millennials, and therefore I want to play their music. And I was sort of interested in the lyrics from some of the songs that our millennials listen to. You know, the older we are, the more we hear today's music and think, oh, thank goodness I was, born in a time period where we had real music. And I suspected incorrectly that millennials would feel the same way. Spotify did a compilation of the top 500 songs for millennials. It was interesting that in the top 100, the following names popped up: Elton John, Johnny Cash, Queen. Those bands are not millennial bands. Now, I didn't see Muddy Waters pop up, which is a shame, or Robert Cray, but, we can't have everything. Here's the lyrics of this song that I want to play, because it's sort of the first line. I have no idea what it means. Coconut Man, Moonhead, and Pea, you ready? I really have no idea what that means, but the first verse seems like everybody's got a price. I wonder how they sleep at night when the sale comes first and the truth comes second. When the sale comes first and the truth comes second. Well, I'll tell you, after 28 years in the financial services industry, we're not the only profession with this issue, but I can tell you there are those where the sale comes first and the truth either comes second or not at all. Why is everybody so serious, acting so mysterious, got shades on your eyes and heels so high that you can't have a good time? Well, I don't know about the heels part, but I think what the singer is talking about is, why do we have to be so serious, whether it's what we're doing for a living or, is it expected that we have to be serious? When we look at our money, obviously we can't get a good return unless we watch our money. That was sarcasm. Watching the money actually can get in the way of you having a good life. And, the money itself, it shouldn't be a problem other than having enough of it. But having too much should not be a problem. And understanding that money is there to let you do, to allow you to do something, to provide for you in retirement, to provide for the things you want to do today. We get too focused on it, which is one of the things I want to make sure you know. You'll know the song probably by now, because she's going to be singing, it's not about the money, money, money. We don't need your money, money, money. I think millennials, based on some of the music I'm doing research into for this show, may have a leg up bigger than we think. And I think that was true of previous generations. After I play the song, we're going to look at an article from Forbes on why do we always sell the next generation short. But for now, British artist, judge from The Voice, Jessie J.
A minute. I'm leaving to Mars. Yeah, we leaving across these undefeatable odds. It's like this, man, you can't put a price on the life. Now, we do this for the love, so we fight and sacrifice every night. So we ain't gonna stumble and fall, never. No. Waiting to see us in the sign of defeat. So we gonna keep everyone moving their feet. So bring back the beat, and then everyone sing.
It's not about the money.
It's not about the money, money, money. We don't need your money, money, money. We just want to make the world dance. Forget about the price tag. It ain't about the cha-ching, cha-ching. It ain't about the, yeah, bling, bling. Okay, we didn't talk like millennials do, but the message of Jesse J's song Price Tag is a very valid message. It's the kind of thing I would have taught my kids or did teach my kids, but glad to see there's somebody out there reinforcing the same concept. So let's talk a little bit about what we went through. I'm in the, I think, baby boomer generation, the tail end. When we were spoken to by the generations that preceded us and figured we were never going to turn out very well. I know we all have friends where that would probably be true. Let's not head that way. Let's talk a little bit more optimistically about things. In Forbes, back in 2012, Adam Tierer, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Adam. I intentionally picked writers today who have interesting last names. So Tierer, January 8, 2012, Forbes in the opinion section. Adam is a writer. He covers high-tech policy, cyber law, and digital economics, but he decided to write something called 10 Things Our Kids Will Never Worry About Thanks to the Information Revolution. And then based on feedback from that, he followed up with an article, Why Do We Always Sell the Next Generation Short? And of course, I like to introduce new words on the show, or at least old words that we don't use very often, as in a shoe obfuscation, which I know many of you have been using ever since I talked about that. Well, in this article, scholars have documented a seemingly never-ending cycle of generational clashes and the juvenoia that typically accompanies it. Evidently, juvenoia is a word. There's a danger facing new generations that the older generation believes is more substantial than whatever they faced as kids. And funny enough, he found a 1950 cartoon by Bill Maudlin in Life magazine, featuring an older fella looking at a middle-aged man who was also looking at his young boy. The older man and the middle-aged man both had a puzzled look on their face trying to figure out what the younger guy next to him was going to, you know, turn out like. And the caption was, every generation has its doubts about the younger generation. You know, we got to sort of let it go. The generational competition isn't healthy. Here's the advantage that millennials have on the rest of us. We used to have this advantage. Time. Time is one of the most critical components of being successful from an investment standpoint. The more time you have, the more risk you can take, the more aggressively you can invest, as long as you make sure you actually do. But this goes way back. T.S. Eliot said, we can assert with some confidence that our own period is one of decline, that the standards of culture are lower than they were 50 years ago, and the evidence of this decline are visible in every department of human activity. Prophecies of doom from the past. We hear the music of today when our ears are more accustomed to rock and roll, and we think, what are they listening to? Thank goodness I was alive when the big bands, the good bands played. Speaking of big bands, that's going back almost 100 years now, and I still listen to big band music. George Mason, university economist, Tyler Cowen, is quoted in this article. You know, parents who are entrusted with the human lives of their own making bring their, you know, fondest, dearest feelings and their time and thousands of dollars to rear their children. When they see their children behave in a way differently than they did, they're going to react. And what's ironic is then you end up sounding like your mother and your father when you were young, but we've forgotten. There's been enough years that we have forgotten that. A new phrase that this economist also created is, many parents and cultural critics have passed through their adventure window. That's half the reason I chose this article. An adventure window, that sounds fun. An adventure window is that period of time when we're young enough to be willing to try new things and experiment with new forms of culture. So we're going to move on from this in a minute, but before we do, you know, I'd like you to start thinking maybe, do I have an adventure window? Is my adventure window open? Am I willing to try something new and experiment? And if not, should I be? It can't be that hard to return to a time period in our lives where we can have an adventure window. Douglas Adams, one of my favorite British authors, I didn't realize he was British until right now, wrote a bunch of books that I've thoroughly enjoyed over the years. Anything that is in the world, this is a quote, anything that is in the world when you're born is normal and ordinary and is just a natural part of the way the world works. Anything that's invented between when you're 15 and 35 is new and exciting and revolutionary, and you can probably get a career in it. Anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural of order of things, unquote. Doesn't that sort of describe what we're doing? Isn't it time we focus maybe on our own lives and not worry so much about other people's lives, particularly from a generational standpoint? It honestly is not going to be the end of the world for millennials or whatever follows them. It's something we need to turn loose. From an investing standpoint, if millennials do what they say they're going to do or are currently doing and spend less than they earn and save, they're going to be fine. They're just facing a few challenges that maybe we didn't face as heavily, with cost being so much higher today, ahead of inflation, I might add, or I should say ahead of income, that maybe they will have a more challenging time. Well, as you all know, I like to take breaks so I can have one of my favorite things. Unfortunately, I'll be making it myself rather than going to one of my favorite places. Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee. One of the other things I've noticed in social media is the amount of advertising that's suddenly appearing. And I wanted to bring up for everyone, when you see a product advertised, and in this case I'm talking about investment and insurance products, and the method of advertising it has phrases in it that are not accurate. For instance, if you have $500,000 or more, if you have $200,000, then you can. Or a product, for instance, it recommends a hybrid annuity. And you do a little research, and you find out you actually don't have to have $200,000. You don't actually have to have $500,000, and there's no such thing as a hybrid annuity. Then I would just like to say you probably should not work with anybody who's making up a name or listing a requirement that isn't accurate. Now, in the case of the $500,000, that's a firm that does not manage less than $500,000. But when you put in the phrase if you want to retire and you want to have enough income, then you need a certain number. Well, maybe, maybe not. Maybe, maybe not. Let's talk money for just a minute. It all depends on your lifestyle. It all depends on your lifestyle. Millennials evidently save more willingly than prior generations. That's good news. But what that also means is they may be more like three or four generations ago, where they're more frugal. They may not appear to be with all the stuff that's out there to buy. And keep in mind, when we talk about generations, that's a generality. Not everybody in every generation behaves a certain way. But in general, if they save more than, for instance, baby boomers, which I have news for you, we weren't exactly known for our savings abilities. But if they save more, they're going to do better. And so saving is important. Investing some of those savings is important. But when it comes to retiring, the amount of money you need, I hate to repeat myself, is the amount of money you need. What everybody else needs is not relevant. So, you know, I think of some of my clients that I've worked with over the years. When I was a trust officer and a private banker, there was a client whose income was over $1 million a year from investments alone. It wasn't enough. It was not enough for them, for their spending. I know that may sound a little shocking to some of you, but it really wasn't. They needed more. They needed more. They actually had to start investing some of what they were getting so that they could, over time, get to where they wanted to be. I've also worked with other people who have more modest amounts and are very happy. There are people, we talked about disparity of income a few weeks ago, there are people who don't want to sacrifice the time and their other interests to make mega bucks. They're happy at $1,000 a month. I'm not kidding. Okay, and just for inflation, maybe it's more like $2,000 now. But they live off less. They have interests that don't require money. It does exist. You may be one of those people. If so, you still have options of what you can do, but don't let anybody sell you something that has a hypothetical name that does not exist, and don't feel like you can't get something in the financial services field just because you've only got a couple $100,000 or $150,000 or whatever that number is. Whatever amount you have is pretty important because it's what you have, and that's what you should worry about. In my book, Investophobia, I talked about the importance of avoiding the fear that is created by comparing yourself with the Joneses too much. You don't want to, as my swim team coach used to say, don't look in the other lane. There's several reasons not to. In swimming, if you're looking in the other lane, chances are you're not going as fast as you would be if you were. I think that applies in life as well. Second of all, you may not see the wall coming, both in swimming and in life, when you're too busy looking at the other lane. So I say all that because if you remember the first song, Jesse J's Price Tag, when the sale comes first and the truth comes second, one of the first indications you may take on its surface as a reason not to work with someone is when you see them altering the truth or, well, worse, and creating products in their own mind that when you see the paperwork, that product's not named. I'm specifically talking about hybrid annuities. All a hybrid annuity is a marketing word to describe any annuity with an income rider. That's not a hybrid. That's an annuity with an income rider. Enough of technical jargon. Let's look a little bit at another British artist, also a millennial. Uplifting song. You've probably heard this when your kids are in the car or something. I am unwritten. I can't read my mind. I'm undefined. I'm just beginning. The pen's in my hand. Ending unplanned. Staring at the blank page before you. Open up the dirty window and let the sun illuminate the words that you could not find. Break tradition. Be outside the lines. Be who you are. I really like the lyrics of this song, and those of you who've known me for a long time personally would know I do have a music background, but I never really paid any attention to the lyrics. I really didn't. To me, when a songwriter writes a song, the music is the lyrics because the music comes from what they were inspired to do. That's how I see it. as I get a little older, I tend to actually look at, well, what is this person trying to say? And is it something I should listen to? So in this case, I think it is more optimism for the millennials. Natasha Bedingfield, Unwritten. And that was Natasha Bedingfield, Unwritten. You know what's interesting? I decided to do a show for millennials because, well, I guess since my daughters are millennials, I get tired of seeing their generation attacked by some of my peers and older when I'm out on social media. We all need to be a little less judgmental and focus on our own lives more than we do everyone else's. But here's one of the things I discovered as I did a little research for this show. You know, whether it's Natasha Bedingfield saying that she's unwritten and she's got a blank page before her and she's looking for words she couldn't find, that nobody else can speak for you, that you need to live your life with your arms wide open and that every day is the day your book begins, the rest is not written. You know, that's good advice for all of us, regardless of what age we are. And I'm finding that even though the musical styles are not necessarily what I tend to listen to, the advice from these songs, let's go back to Jesse J's price tag. When the sale comes first and the truth comes second, obviously the truth should come first and the sale second, and then we should stop for a minute and smile. And why be so serious? It's interesting that maybe newer generations learn from our mistakes, and if we're listening, not only do we teach our children, and they teach their children, but we learn from our kids as well. And I think that's an important concept. When it comes to investing, it's important because the world doesn't change in some ways, but it does change in others. My family background for hundreds of years was farming. The family farm is in Georgia. It's now not entirely a farm. It's got houses on most of it. But originally, the Pucketts, many of us, and the Roberts family, my mother's maiden name, were farmers. And some things, okay, we have genetically modified stuff. We have all sorts of new pesticides. I'm not in favor of any of those, by the way. But, I mean, there are some advancements. But the bottom line is how you plant a crop, the quality of the soil, how much sun and from what angle it comes when you put in your rows, how you fertilize it if it needs fertilizer, depending on your soil quality, how much water it gets. In the old days, you were almost entirely dependent on the rain. Now we have fancy irrigation systems, but nonetheless, droughts still affect crops. A lot of that has not changed. Now, why am I bringing this up? Good question. Well, because in the investment world, things do change, more like the weather from a long-term standpoint. As an example, ships, airplanes cross the Atlantic and the Pacific all the time, but and they do pretty much the same thing when they do, but the conditions are different each trip. And there's some consistency, but there's also some times when there's more air turbulence, there's storms, the waves are higher. Some of that has not changed, but the ships they're in, the airplanes they're in, have changed. In investing, we've talked a lot the past few weeks about the bond market. A friend of mine mentioned consumer spending went up a little bit more than expected. That could be the beginning of the interest rate rise that everybody in my industry has been predicting for a long time. The problem with interest rates rising, here's a little thing. We all think the Fed and the Treasury Department can control that and that world governments can control what interest does. And they can, except when they can't. It works until it doesn't work, both of which mean the same thing. In essence, the more we try to control chaos, the more ultimately we lose control. And when we lose control of interest rates, it's going to get very ugly very quickly in many, many different ways, but particularly for those of us who are invested in bond funds. So let's take a brief moment and remind everyone that when interest rates fall, as they have pretty much since 1982, there are a few years that are exceptions to that, bonds do very, very well. If you have a 5% bond in a 4% market, your bond is worth more than its face amount. Well, we're now in an environment where rates are historically absurdly low and have been for quite some time, and a lot of bonds out there are more 1.5%, 2%, 2.5%. When we get back into a 4%, 5%, 6% market, many of those bonds are going to lose principal value. Now, if you own the individual bond, as we've discussed, no big deal. Hold it till maturity. You get your money back and reinvest at a higher interest rate. But if you own a bond fund, you cannot hold till maturity. Bond funds do not mature. And as a result, you have to just sort of recognize that maybe, even if interest rates never go up, it just doesn't make sense to invest in something that has such a great loss of principal should interest rates go up, and if they don't go up, earns such an absurdly low return. Life is about more than money, but money is important. Which brings up a thought I had. I like to ask people, what's the money for? It's a nice, vague question that it's open-ended. You can go anywhere with it when you're answering it. But I want you to know more what I mean when I ask that question. When I say, what's the money for? It's not just about the money itself. It's about, well, what will it do for you? So if I say to somebody, what's the money for? And they say, well, it's to generate income for me, Paul. I need to generate more income. Why? Now, that sounds like a really dumb question, so I'll rephrase it. If you had more income, what would that mean for you? What would you be able to do that you're currently not doing? We discussed several times on this show so far, millennials apparently, according to studies, save more as a percentage of their income than previous generations, or at least the past few. Well, why save? What are savings? What are investments? Another word for both is deferred spending. Deferred spending. Spending you're not doing today. Spending you plan to do in the future. Well, what do you want to do? What is it that money will allow you to do? And here's why that's important. If you know what you want to do and you know how much money is required to do it, you're more likely to do what? Save and invest. Because you have a goal. There's a reason behind what you do. And that reason, A, is a motivator. It is. You're more motivated to defer spending your money, running up credit card debt, spending more than you earn, or simply just not saving anything. You're more likely to do it, so that's important. And B, because that's what it's all about. It's all about your life. It's all about what you can do in the future. Now, I've tried to play, I think my kids will approve, I've tried to play music that millennials listen to today. Jesse J and Natasha Bedingfield, coincidentally, both are British, but singers from the millennial generation with a message to their peers from Price Tag and from Unwritten. Feral, happy, message to everybody, but newer artists, I mean, compared to Muddy Waters and some of the things I like. I was going to close the show. My apologies, girls. I was going to close the show with Katy Perry, Roar. And I was going to say to millennials, just ignore everybody. Ignore everybody else. Ignore previous generations. Ignore your own generation. Do your thing. Focus on what you love. Work hard, but also have fun. Spend less than you earn. All good advice. And I was going to say, roar. Be the generation that roars. Well, you all can Google. You all have iTunes or something similar, Google Play Music, or you have a record store, whatever it is. By the way, records are making a comeback, which is pretty cool. I mean, the real thing, vinyl. At any rate. So I'm still going to give that message. Hey, guys, roar. But I just couldn't bring myself to play all millennial songs on the show. I'm feeling a serious need for electric guitar. So this is a stretch to turn this into millennial music, but then again, that's what I'm here for. And since I'm the host, I get to do what I would like to do. Hopefully you all will enjoy it. I want to introduce the song we're going to close the show with. It's got a great message as well, from an interview that The Wire magazine did on March 9th of this year. And the interview was with an artist from Toronto that is Billboard's number one blues guitarist this year that you've heard on this show before. I played Anthony Gomes' Darkness Before the Dawn when I interviewed the girls and the executive director over at the Pace Center for Girls. Great song. Well, we're going to play another song from Anthony Gomes, and it's from his album, I believe, Electric Field Holler, let's just make sure, which is his 12th album. And the name of the song is Blues Child. Blues Child. Well, we're talking about the new generation, child works. The backstory, when he was interviewed about the album, he was asked to take us on a tour of that album. He said, Blues Child, excuse me, was an idea of being a blues man You could be a blues child. You're born to play the blues. Here's what's interesting. Anthony Gomes wrote that song with a talented young man, Talon Noble Latz. Talon is a talented blues guitar player and singer. And when he wrote this song with Anthony Gomes, he was 11. Anthony felt that in many ways, this is a quote, it's autobiographical for myself and just felt natural to do this song on the record. The idea he had is that blues had a baby and called it rock and roll. You know, it really is a musical message of several different musical styles blending. And he felt it was a message that was important to share. I do as well. Plus the fact, as I mentioned, and I'm sure you all know, I'm just dying to hear some blues guitar before we close out the show. Thank you for joining me again on Getting There, and I hope you enjoy, millennials as well, Anthony Gomes, Blues Child.
Slowing me down, you gotta get out of my way. I got the blues, Daddy, deep down in my soul. It's like a fire that's burning out of control. I'm a six-string slinger, a two-joint singer. Daddy, I was born to play. You gotta let me go. The highway's calling my name. It's hard, but we both know. I'm a six-string slinger, a two-joint singer. Mama, I was born to play. I was born a blues child. Yeah, yeah. I was born to play the blues. We'll be right back.
And that was Anthony Gomes from his Electric Field Holler album, Blues Child. Sorry, kids, I had to have some electric guitar. I mean, I just did. Doesn't mean you have to, but hey, always nice to be exposed to new things. Well, today was an attempt from a gray-haired fellow to address some of the issues millennials face and to give them, I hope, some encouragement, to give those of you who are parents and grandparents of millennials some hope, and to remind everybody things are never, ever as bad as we think they are. They're just challenges that make life more interesting. How you react to them and how you handle them is perhaps more important than the challenges themselves. Okay, well, I hope you all have an enjoyable week until next Wednesday. I'm looking forward to an upcoming interview in a few weeks with Myron Campbell, technically, who wrote a really cool children's book about baseball. The book title is The Adventures of Melvin Walker, and it's available currently on Amazon.com. You can hear an interview in the next couple of weeks. On June 6th, Myron Campbell, I call him Ron, we'll see what he wants me to call him on the show. June 6th at noon, he will be on Build a Better Life radio show on WHOV 88.1 FM with host Edith White. He'll be discussing the adventures of Melvin Walker and his plans for our youth. I'm looking forward to having him on the show. And incidentally, you can listen to that on the iHeartRadio app. Have a great week. I look forward to being back next week. Till then, have fun.